This is Charlene from Account Services. Would you like to get a lower interest rate?
The renewed mind is not adjusting our thoughts about God. The renewed mind is adjusting our thoughts about ourselves.
Webcasting to the world.
Do you remember the moment you saw yourself and God and God and you, and you were one with the universe and God and everybody?
Knowing the truth about the gospel.
You were one with the prostitutes and pimps and priests and kings, and there was nobody on earth that was better than you nor less than you.
That we are all righteous.
And no one on earth was any less in Christ than anyone else.
That's Mike Williams, and this is the Gospel Revolution.
Welcome to the Gospel Revolution Powercast for the 7th of March 2013, coming to you from the Gospel Revolution Studios in Nashville, Tennessee, where we are linking up once again with the founding president of the Gospel Revolution from the GR headquarters in beautiful Houston in the free state of Texas, Mr. Michael Williams.
Good evening, Barris.
Good morning, Michael.
We got to get this together someplace, dude.
Maybe what we need is we need someone to come in and show us how to do this.
Yes. Well, then it wouldn't be so much fun if we knew how to do it.
I am not, I don't believe there is a hell. I am not a Christian, and I don't believe in sin as well. I am not a Christian. Now that's good news. Ain't that good news? I am not a I am not.
Ladies and gentlemen, girls and boys, Methodists and Presbyterians, esteemed listeners all, welcome to the Gospel Revolution Guilt Trip Trilogy Part 2, where in an unprecedented move of mental dexterity, we're combining with the first week of our, what is this pledge drive?
This is the spring pledge drive.
We're the first week of our spring pledge drive, where we're going to slay some more dragons, heal some more wounds, wound some heals, discomfort the comfortable, and rattle some cages, and in which we are going to examine at close quarters the whole subject of guilt and its effects on a redeemed, perfect, and holy humanity, and that would be...
all of us.
Yeah, I know. Even if they're loony liberals or badly potty-trained conservatives, you want everybody.
All of us. Every one of us. One of these days I'll get that across to you, Barris. I don't know what's going to take.
Mate, look, if we can't have a difference, we can't have an elite. And if we can't have an elite, then I can't join them.
Well, I think you'll work it out in the long run.
Hey, that's exactly what Christianity's done, hasn't it? Remember George Orwell's Animal Farm? We're all equal, but some of us are just a little bit more equal than others.
Yes, absolutely.
Gospel Revolution.
All around the world, more and more people have stopped going to church. In the United States alone, almost 3 million walk out of church every year and never go back. Could it be the conflicting message of a loving God that will torture many in a place called hell was just a little too much? Could it be that the gospel is good news for everyone, the whole world, and not just good news for few and bad news for most? Could it be that there is no division of people, some sinners, some saints? The number one reason people gave for leaving church was they did not believe their pastors were telling them the gospel truth. And they were right. If the gospel truth is not good news for everyone, it's not good news for anyone. 1. The Gospel According to Mike by Mike Williams. Available at bookstores, Amazon.com, and other fine retailers.
1 is now available as an ebook at Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com for a limited time only, at the introductory price of just $3.99. Available also in hardback and paperback. So, Mike, we are now at the very first day of our spring pledge drive. What do you do with all that money?
Well, the nice thing about the contributions that come into the Gospel Revolution is that we do take a lot of pride in the fact that those funds are maximized as much as is possible. And it just seems to be growing all the time. The folks in Kenya are doing great. We're looking forward to hearing from Moses and finding out how things are going there and how they turned out with the election. And the interest in that part of the world and in other parts of the world seems to be growing. One thing that I have to give everybody an update on is with Eva Mull. Eva has been trying to decide whether she wanted to be a pop music star or share the gospel. But right now, she seems to be getting offers to do the gospel one right after the other. Her most recent gig has been an invitation to do a internet-based radio show, kind of like ours. It is directed at 25,000 Christian missionaries around the planet in 180-something countries. And it is designed for these 25,000 Christian Korean missionaries. Eva has about 15 minutes of time on the show. And part of her time, she's going to be sharing one of her songs on it with her guitar. And the rest of her time, she's going to be sharing the gospel of peace. She is sharing the gospel of peace with 25,000 Korean Christian missionaries. Thank you guys so much for participating. Knowing you're there is just a very powerful and positive thing for me personally. And to know that what we're all doing really is getting this gospel understanding out. I search and I look for another group somewhere that is sharing this gospel message in this fashion to the planet, and I can't find another group. This is it. Everybody who steps out, everybody who writes a book, everybody who makes an effort, we always encourage them and get them to step out as much as we possibly can. We have recruited Wade Brewer, and he is on board now with us to do not just the one show that we did, but to do more. I was talking to Jeff last night, and I really do want to milk all that we can out of Wade Brewer. He is a gifted man. He's gifted especially in, not limited to, but especially in his ability to tell Bible analogies and stories that encapsulates the entire gospel message. You heard one of them in the Moses and the school bus. I mean, that is a brilliant story, and he doesn't quote a single Bible verse, but he tells this story. Now, what many of you don't know is Wade Brewer is chocked full of those stories. And we are going to bring them out of him one at a time, and we're going to get them recorded because the world needs to hear those. And we're doing more and more with as much as we have to do it with. Whatever it takes to get people involved and active in the gospel so the world can hear it.
That is superb. Mate, that is great news about Wade joining us for more broadcasts, because I mean, Moses and the bus. What a story. Guys, if you don't know what we're talking about, you just need to go back into the podcast archives and listen. And you won't find anyone called Moses and the bus, but you will find one called something about a bigger God, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
I've had people calling me up and saying, I really enjoyed what Wade Brewer said. I am feeling so much bigger in myself in the fact that I got so much of a bigger God than I thought I had. It's just so good. Oh, that's exciting. We have Eva, who is broadcasting to 25,000 Christian Korean missionaries. That is unbelievable, mate.
Yes. Yes, considering, you know, 5 months ago, Eva was as opposed to this gospel message as anyone has ever possibly been. We have Billy down in Cape Coral, I believe it is, in Florida.
Are they coming on soon, aren't they?
Yes, we're manipulating and coercing all that we can. I don't think we're going to have to do too much with this one, though, because I think Billy is at a point to where he's about to explode with the gospel. He has the relative, I'm not sure if it's a brother or what, in the Dominican, and he has started sharing the gospel with him. And we now have someone in the Dominican who has completely embraced the gospel, who's there in the ministry as a missionary there. So all of these, you know, it's kind of funny. It looks as though that the gospel revolution is going to tag into the entire missionary structure set up by the Christian community around the planet. So what, instead of us trying to reach out and share the gospel with the people, we're sharing the gospel with the missionaries who share Christianity. And as they embrace the gospel, we leave the job up to them. This pattern really is setting up. You know, that really is what happened with Moses. Moses was somebody already firmly established in Christianity and in Christian missions.
We're talking about Moses Gata. We're talking about Moses Gata from Kenya. Yeah.
Yes, not the Moses on the school bus. Yeah, so that's really what happened with him. We go in, you know, almost surreptitiously, and we get these key players who we really don't know are going to be that. And suddenly, with one single person, we're reaching an entire nation. With one single person, we're reaching 25,000 Korean missionaries. So this is like an organization on steroids, and the time that it would and should take us to build this organization is being slashed into seconds instead of years almost. I've always said, give me somebody who knows their Bible, who knows their doctrine, and that is the person that I have the ability to reach within 45 minutes. Give me 45 minutes with any one of them. Any one of them, just give me 45 minutes. And so far, that has, as best of my recollection, has proven to be true. Here is the situation, folks. We're getting so much done on so little. What we want to do, of course, is that much more. I would love to tell you how I got up one morning and was in the hour of prayer and how God spoke to me and revealed to me how that this gospel revolution could spread around the world by drafting into the understanding of the gospel key people. Because my goal is to reach a billion people before I die, and I've already bought my urn, but I would love to be able to tell you how that this was a forethought, this was a vision. But it wasn't. I'm looking back at it, and it's like, this is brilliant. But all of my brilliance seems to come in watching it later, you know, after I've been taken by surprise by the brilliance of this incredible gospel and the process of it. So I'm very grateful. Goodness, we are in the middle of the spring pledge drive, and the only thing I can tell you is that I'm very grateful. Please understand that so much is happening and so much is going on that it's hard to even really communicate. I am sitting here this morning waiting with anticipation for Eva to call me and tell me how her time on this radio show went. Folks, she is speaking. She is sharing the gospel of peace with 25,000 Korean Christian missionaries. We're off to the races. It's a brilliant plan. I wish I would have come up with it.
So, everybody, send in your springs. And what else do we want to drive for? Springs and what else?
Springs? What are you talking about?
It's your spring pledge drive, buddy. It's your drive. Yeah, you tell me.
Your springs.
Nuts, bolts, mattresses, anything, mate?
It doesn't. We'll use it, whatever it is.
Let's say in mainline religion, we would tell you we're going to drill water wells, and then we'd show you a picture of a nice little baby, skinny, of course, but nice. And then we'd say, look at that face. Don't you want to give him pure water? And we'd do it that way. In this, the gospel of grace and peace, we don't even know what's going to happen next. We've got to tell you after the fact that we have even Mull up there who fought tooth and nail against the gospel, but now we're speaking to 25,000 missionaries. We have Wade Brewer coming online. We have the boys from Florida coming online. And all this is happening, and we couldn't have told you last pledge drive, hey, this is what we're going to make happen. We didn't know it was going to happen, did we, mate?
No, absolutely. There would not have been. Please understand that the gospel revolution is not an attempt of one or two people who are gifted to get this job done. This is not about a single person or even just a small group of people. This, my entire goal, and I'm very happy to be surrounded with people who have that same goal in their mind and heart, and that is to search and to identify every gift we possibly can in every person we possibly can, and to really encourage that. It doesn't make any difference what it is that you've done. Ever since the Esri brothers came out with their book, we've done everything we can to help promote that. And I was very, very happy to find out that up until they did their free book thing, they said that most all of their books that they had sold was through the gospel revolution. And I was really very, very grateful for that, because that's where we are going to excel. We're going to excel by identifying what others have done and can do and encouraging it. And that's all we're doing. It's not that hard of a job at all. In fact, it is just quite pleasant. I can't tell you what a joy it is to get a call from Billy down in Florida and find out, goodness gracious, his brother and others, and the drastic changes in people's perception of even what the gospel is altogether. To be talking to Eva and her telling me about all of these goings on that's happening with her, that she's just literally being drafted. I didn't hear from Eva for the better part of a week, and that's not happened in the last 4.5 months or so. And I wondered what was happening. I just thought, well, I think, you know, maybe she just needs some time. And so I finally get almost this winded call from her after a week. And she tells me that she was invited to speak at one of the Korean churches there in L.A. And that she shared with them the difference between the blood of a goat and the blood of Christ. And she asked the entire congregation why they were confessing their sins. If the blood of a goat took it away for a year, why are we diminishing the blood of Christ? And that entire week, now this is continued, but that entire week, her home was a parade of people coming in and out. I mean, it reminded me of Paul being in his home, you know, and people coming to visit. She had people coming to her, telling her they were dropping out of church. They had no interest or no need to go back. And this was from the church that she spoke in. And asking her, and of course the funny thing is, and she laughs and laughs and laughs. And the thing that is impressive to me is nobody explained to her, now Eva, we're not out to try to start another church in L.A. I never had that conversation with her. We didn't broach that at all. So one of the ladies who was one of the financial supporters of the church told Eva that she was going to quit going to church and she was going to stop tithing. Well, Eva made sure that she understood that you know, you don't have to stop. You don't have to stop tithing if that's what you want to do. And the woman explained to her, no, after I've heard you, I can't sit there and listen to that anymore. I can't do it. So she told Eva, I have the money. Will you start a church and I will tithe to your church? And Eva just laughed and laughed and laughed and laughed. And she explained to the lady, that's not what this is all about. She said, we won't be starting a church. She says, we may We may have some meetings where we all get together and share the gospel, but, you know, you're not quitting one church to start another one. What the gospel does to a person's way of thinking about spiritual things seems to do it on its own. It really blew me away. And again, I cannot emphasize to you enough, I never had a conversation with Eva that, I mean, she's 4 months into this. And this has been almost a month ago. And we never had that conversation that explains our organizational approach or the dynamic understanding that we have of simply being a help to those who are helping others. If you find something that is reaching out to other people, we're going to support it. We're going to get behind it. We're going to be the shoulder that is there to lean on and to encourage these folks. This has nothing to do with starting another church. And when she told me about what this lady said, I mean, she just openly laughed. She had a big belly laugh going on of how funny it was. She just was thought it was so funny that this lady would want to quit one church and start another one. So the joy of being in my position is simply observing all of this. It is just, it's mind-boggling, the joy that we have in doing this. I know I speak for Barris, the great joy that he has. Now, it could be his salary that's keeping him doing it. I'm not real sure whether it's the massive salary that he gets for this or just the sheer joy. I'm not real sure yet.
It's your deep, it's your deep pockets and short arms that are keeping me here, buddy. Let me tell you.
I just knew it. I just knew it. This is something from our heart to the world. This is something from your heart. As you give, if some of you can increase your monthly, it will increase what we can do. Those of you that have never stepped in, please don't think that there is an amount that's too small to be involved. It is the involvement that's important. It's that you feel and know that you're very much a part of this in every way that you can be. This gospel revolution is a train that has left the station. But it's really bizarre because it's not like we got an engineer up there leading this and guiding this, and we've got somebody that's taking care of this part and that part. Now, there are, everybody's doing their part. But with this gospel revolution and this train that's left the station, it's like we all looked up and the train was leaving the station. And we're all trying desperately to jump on board just so we can be a part of it. The gospel is in and of itself a power in and of itself. In fact, it's not a power. It is the power of God. So this is not something that we're in charge of. It's in charge. I hope you can understand, those of you that have experienced it know exactly what I'm talking about. It is not me that's in charge. It's not Mike Williams Ministries that's in charge. It's the gospel that's in charge. We simply have organized to be able to be a part of this. It is really an amazing thing. And I'm very, very happy to be a part of it. And I know you guys are too. I know you're very, very, very proud of the gospel revolution. I know that you just have to be tickled pink to hear these things. From the years and the times that we were desperately just trying to share with, you know, people just in our path, which still all that we do, it just happens to now. This just seems to be getting on steroids. So it's very exciting.
Some of those pledges that you pledge, family, will be going towards, I know, because if they don't go towards it, I'll be putting my hand in my own pocket for it. But we'll be going towards improving the quality of what we present to you in this broadcast every week. You remember a couple of weeks ago when we had Wade Brewer on that we had telephone line quality because that's all we were able to communicate on. But I'm looking forward to the day when I can overnight a microphone and even a laptop if necessary so that people can communicate with us the same way that you're hearing Michael and I communicate with that same clarity and quality. And then just overnight it back and send it to somebody else who we might be interviewing next week. But my aim, my personal aim is is to get this gospel of grace and peace out to as many people with the highest quality possible. And I know that when you look back at the things that you've achieved already with Moses Garter and Muslims saying to him, this, we can accept this. This is not Christianity. We can accept the fact that God sees us as righteous, holy, and perfect. When you look back at the awesome effects that Eva Muller's having, and you don't even know what you've done to achieve that, but one day hopefully we all will. Thank you, Mike. Where do people send their pledges to, Mike?
The best thing to do with a pledge is to pick up your phone and call the main office in Florida. Give Jeff a call, and that number, I'm sure you have it right there in front of you.
Funny you should say that, Mike. The number is 352-569-4889. That is 352-569-4889, and speak to Jeffrey.
Dial it up, and Jeff is going to be more than glad to be able to help you. What's going to happen, though, during this next 3 weeks, and by the end of 3 weeks, he probably is not going to be able to talk, but he's going to be giving you a call. So expect the call. Expect that you are going to get, you're going to get hit up, folks. So Jeff's not going to let you by. He's going to be calling you. He's going to be hitting you up. I know what he's going to do. And I think that even that has to be a gift. I think about trying to do what Jeff does, and I absolutely go stone cold. I can't even think. And he does it every quarter. And he does it again. Now, once every 5 years, I could probably get the courage to sit down at the phone and start calling everybody in the Gospel Revolution and potential contributors and appeal to you. But most likely, I'm going to go down the list, and I'm going to look at the ones. It's like, I bet they can't afford it right now, or I bet, goodness, you know, they gave really good last time, or we've asked them two times and they've not done it. And by the time I got through exercising the list, I wouldn't be calling anybody. Because the ones that are giving, goodness, I don't want to bother them. But Jeff don't care. He simply don't care.
He's like a machine, man, isn't he?
When it comes to raising funds for the Gospel Revolution, this man has no shame.
352-569-4889. 352-569-4889. That is the number you'll get Jeffrey on. If you want to get to him before he gets to you, by all means, feel
free.
There you
go. Yeah, get to him before he gets to you. I mean, that would be the thrill of his day. To have calls coming in instead of him making the calls.
Now, in the highly unlikely event that you don't get your call from Jeff, I found a way to permanently repair that problem. Here's what you do. You call him up and you say, and what's wrong with me then? Tell him he's insulted you. Tell him he's insulted your mother. Tell him he's insulted your dead grandparents. Rip into him. And let him know that you don't intend to be treated this way. You let him know. Your money's as good as anyone else's. I've found that never fails.
When you're feeling down, or you got the case of the blues, why don't you listen to the
Gospel Revolution?
Guilt and shame. Michael, these are the twin tools of religious manipulation. If I can locate your guilt and shame, I can control what you do, can't I?
Well, it seems to have been successful for Christianity now, at least for 2,000 years, better than 2,000 years. Instead of allowing the gospel to eliminate guilt and shame, we use them as tools to manipulate and control. And I might add to extract money out of people also. This really is a plague. When this earth should be wallowing in the reality of the gospel, complete absent of guilt and shame. And you can't deal with the issue of guilt without dealing with the issue of shame. One of the verses that I'm reminded of, in fact, it shows up several times, especially in the book of Isaiah, talking about the gospel and the power and the impact of the results of the cross. It specifically mentions shame. It says, for your shame, you shall have double. Then shame is going to be gone. Your shame is going to be taken away. Shame is not going to be there anymore. You and I were having a conversation about some of these things as we were talking about the show and the topics that we're going to cover. And you sent me a video clip from TED.com and the girl's name, I can't remember.
Brené Brown.
Brené Brown. And I watched both of those clips and she has some brilliant things to say. And you asked me what I saw as the difference between guilt and shame, because she had made some definition to that, which was very good. And for me, guilt is based on what you do, but shame is based on who you are. I think that that definition is very appropriate, especially when you look at Isaiah's prophecy about that shame is going to be taken away. The very issue of your own worth and your own value, that issue is going to be taken off the table. The gospel literally removes from even the consideration as to what your true value and worth is. So there's nothing done in shame. We talk about it and we say, well, that's shame-based. What does that mean? Well, that means we are appealing to you based on who you are. That we're trying to get you to be something that you're not. In the gospel revolution, you're not going to hear that. Everyone may have good advice for someone about something that they do or that they do not do. But it's never going to be that by changing this, it will change who and what you fundamentally are. Because regardless of what you do, it cannot change who you are in Christ. When we have shame removed, that means my identity is not up for discussion. Shame has been removed. My actions may disappoint me. They may disappoint you. They may impress you. They may impress me. I've been very impressed with me at times, to tell you the truth. And, but the fact of it is that no matter how impressed or depressed I am with what I do, it does not change who I am. Richard Moll emphasized this as much as any human being and any of us ever have. He would end most phone conversations with me, and I think with most everyone else. Now, Michael, don't forget, you are righteous and holy and perfect in the eyes of God. Now, that's not a jingle, folks. That's not a gospel revolution logo. Or a stamp, or something that we say just for saying it. It's the truth. It is absolute truth. In that truth, there is a complete removal of shame, because the question of who we are has been answered. There's not even a possibility for shame to be involved in relationship to God. We feel a sense of guilt about what we do. And the issue of being freed from guilt and being freed from shame places you in a different psychological world than the rest of this planet. Now, let me tell you what I know that every person in the gospel revolution has gone through. When you embrace, or as we say, as the gospel embraces you and embraces your brain, there are things that start to happen to you in the way that you think. And the way you think begins to change so dynamically that you begin to feel like you really don't fit anywhere. Now, it's a very odd thing that happens, that even though you are one with everybody, suddenly you're not really sure where you even fit anymore, because you don't think like the rest of the population of this planet, regardless of what their religious persuasion is, because your identity is not up for negotiation anymore. There is no negotiations going on about who or what you are. You know that you are righteous and holy. You know that you are perfect. This is not a slogan of the gospel revolution. This is a declaration of truth of the gospel itself. We just simply happen to know it. We simply happen to embrace it. We simply happen to have been embraced by it. And in this removal of guilt and shame, you've got to realize that in the absence of guilt and shame, you do not think like the rest of the world does. Because the only thing, did I say the only thing?
Say that again, Mike.
Gladly. The only thing that can remove guilt and shame is the gospel. People who've never heard doctrines about God and Christ in Christianity, if they've never heard it at all, they're better off than people who have. But still, the human being needs this incredible gospel message.
Mike, in the show notes, you wrote, the two main arenas of guilt and shame are, one, the mind, and two, in daily life. Mm-hmm. And you posed a question, what is a renewed mind? And in daily life, you made the comment that attaching positive or negative outcomes to daily events as being spiritual marks the end of spiritual growth. You stop growing spiritually when you start attaching positive or negative outcomes to daily events. And the continuation of self-righteousness is only encouraged along with guilt and pride. These two areas, the mind and daily life, would you just help us understand what you mean by the difference between them both?
Well, what is a renewed mind is the question that we have to address. We all were persuaded that a renewed mind in whatever brand of Christianity we were in was coming to where that we didn't have dirty thoughts, we didn't have negative thoughts, to the point to where that we even try to adjust our mouth and try to make it talk as though we are positive. And you know, I'm sorry, none of these external wrenches to the mind is going to adjust it in the way that it needs to be adjusted. When the problem is the internal workings, tightening the nuts and bolts around the edges is not going to change anything. You may squeak a little less, but you're certainly not going to think any better. So when it comes to the renewed mind, the first thing that must be addressed is the understanding that a renewed mind is not a moral call. The renewed mind is not an evaluation of just how dirty or clean the thoughts I have are, or how positive or negative the thoughts that I have are. The renewed mind is the one that is freed from attaching spiritual value to whether or not I have a positive thought, or to whether or not I have a thought that is impure or unclean or any of these things.
If I'm hearing you right, you're saying that a renewed mind has got nothing to do with drug, sex, and rock and roll.
Absolutely.
But it's got everything to do with the way I see myself?
Yes, absolutely. And not only the way that we see ourselves, but also the renewed mind is understanding that I now know who I am. The renewed mind is not adjusting our thoughts about God. The renewed mind is adjusting our thoughts about ourselves. The entire understanding of this gospel is not training our minds on what we think about God. Your experiences are going to color what you think God is, does, or does not do. The gospel is allowing our minds to be trained on what God thinks about us. It truly is a revelation of the view and the opinion of God. It is not a revelation of what we ought to think about God. Just on a logical basis, just stop and think, if God is God, then really, so my need is for my peanut brain to understand God? I don't think it's going to happen. I can speak all the swelling words that I can come to you with about my opinion about God. And let me say this as clearly as can be stated. Everything that I believe about God is either incomplete or wrong.
Everything I know about God is either incomplete or incorrect.
Absolutely.
What can I believe then that would be correct and complete?
Well, that's a wonderful question. Now, I find great comfort in knowing that everything that I think about God is either incomplete or incorrect. I find great peace in that. Now, if you are finding your identity in what you think about God, suddenly your world just flew completely apart. For me, after having the gospel in my brain for these decades, and its continuation of being there, I am at complete peace with what I don't know about God. Because the thing that has brought peace into my life is not how much I understand God or what I understand about God. It is what God understands and knows about me, and the accuracy of that is without question. This is the basic difference between Christianity and the gospel. Christianity is trying to get us to understand more about God. They're trying to get us to understand God, to figure God out. What does God do? What will he do? Well, the gospel doesn't tell us what he does or what he will do. It tells us what he did 2,000 years ago. And what he did not result in us gaining a full understanding of God. It resulted in us having one thread, one single thread out of the vast greatness of God's knowledge and his wisdom and his understanding. And this one single thread stabilizes the mind of the human being. And that is this gospel of grace and peace, which is a revelation of God's view and opinion of us as individuals and collectively as a human race. Now, it's vitally important to know the gospel cannot reveal to an individual who they are without revealing to that individual that every human being on this planet stands in that same position. There is no such thing as a personal gospel. There is no such thing as a personal Lord and Savior. These terms have been manufactured by Christianity to deliberately take the focus away from the gospel and puts it back on us. Our self-righteousness, what can we do? How can we do it? How can we improve our relationship with God? And then all of that, in turn, is defined by how God is responding to my efforts or my failures. I have no sense in my being whatsoever that God is responding to my good deeds or my failures whatsoever. I have none of that in me at all anymore. What does that mean? That means I'm not a Christian, because that's what Christianity is. Christianity is this measure of deeds that is either going to bring you reward or is going to bring you retribution from God. That's gone out of me completely. In my daily life, I have none of that going on whatsoever. I will never be able to communicate the degree of peace that I find in the fact that all of that is gone. I am never measuring in my life how God is responding to what I'm doing, what I'm saying. All of that's gone. Now, the only thing that I can tell you is that the gospel removed that. I didn't have the mechanics to get that out of my brain. But that is what has happened to my brain, and I can't tell you what the world looks like now. You will never know how righteous and holy and perfect you are until you know how righteous and holy and perfect the person who's sitting next to you is. So, In light of having any consideration of how is God evaluating my life right now, removed from the mind, is he pleased? Is he unpleased? Is he happy? Is he unhappy? Is he ready to bless? Is he ready to punish? When all of that is gone, do you see by virtue of the fact that that being removed, bam, guilt and shame are gone because the very premise of guilt and shame is gone. This, Varys, is the entire issue of the renewed mind. This is what the mind is being renewed to and from. This one single thread of sanity from the vastness of God's wisdom and his understanding that we are, in Christ, holy and righteous and perfect, without fault and without blame. If you're without fault and you're without blame, there cannot be guilt. There cannot be shame. You cannot be shame because you're righteous and holy. who you are has been addressed. If you're without fault and without blame, then the issue of your deeds being measured before God has been dealt with also.
The gospel says the war is done. Guilt and judgment, there's none. The Father's covenant with the Son made God and human family one. God and man enjoy the gain. That stealthy gospel rides again. Before the light had dawned in me, difference was all that I could see. Oh, if you don't pray the sinner's prayer, you're on your way to hell's despair. But now, I know we're all the same. The stealthy gospel rides again. New wine in old skins cannot stay. New skins are must, or the old will burst, and old and new will fall away. New wine's a fountain from within. That stealthy gospel rides again. How well I see in life's rear view, my criticism came undone. My mind began to open up. Judging had a softer touch. I am so free, so calm, so sane. That stealthy gospel, it rides again.
Revolution.
It seems to me you've said in the past sometime that every time the concept of salvation is mentioned in the New Testament, that it's always got to do with the mind. Is this what you're referring to?
Yes, and it's not that every time that it says that in the New Testament that it's referring to the mind. It is that most of Paul's teaching on the subject of salvation is referring to the mind. It's talking about the saving of the soul, the renewing of the mind is one of the particular comments that causes us to go there. Most of Paul's teaching really does have to do with this concept, that there is something that needs to be done. I know of one source for freedom from guilt and shame, and that's the gospel. And that is the renewed mind. That is the renewing of the mind, and it is the saving, literal saving of the soul.
Now, last week we talked about the fact that where there is no law, there is no guilt. And where there is no guilt, there is freedom to be yourself. That is a huge step forward from what traditional Christianity has taught us. I mean, if there's anything we know about traditional Christianity, it really doesn't matter whether it's Catholic, Protestant, or Calathumpian. The whole deal is, we got to kill off our flesh, by gee. We better get rid of that old man. Golly, that sucker is just pulling us down, and we are going to help. And it all comes down to us purifying ourselves. I mean, when you really look at it, you wonder why on earth Jesus had to die if we could clean ourselves up.
Well, to quote one of the cardinals who was being interviewed not only about the Pope this past week, but also about the troubles of the Catholic Church with sex crimes. Let's forget about sins. These are crimes. The Archbishop over Scotland just resigned because he was a sexual predator.
Wasn't there also a cardinal in L.A.?
Yes, and the cardinal in L.A. And now you've got to understand, these are situations that have come to light in a drastic attempt of the Catholic Church to cover it all up. So very little of it has come to light. But even in this attempt to suppress this information, I ain't even want to comment about all the people that I think have known about this for all these years and have done things to suppress this, but it goes to high places, which has been proven. So in the process, now, of course, they're saying, yes, 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 we have all of these problems. And this comment just blew me back over the sofa to show the difference between the gospel and, in this case, Catholicism. Man, if this doesn't do it, nothing will do it for you. He said that the church needs to purify itself. I was outraged. I was enraged. I was sickened. That statement, Barris, is shame-based. It is saying that the church has to purify itself. Okay, so Mike Williams, what would you do? How would you say this differently to where that this is not shame-faced? First off, we have to understand that the church is purified. It is perfect. God finds no fault in the church. These dudes need to get their act together. They need to be prosecuted according to the crimes that they have committed, and the people who've covered it up need to lose their jobs.
But that is not confined to Catholicism alone, surely, Michael. I remember for years in Christianity and Protestant, and very right-wing Protestantism at that, and also in my days in the with the Charismaniacs, I was very much aware that if I was to be a better me, it was really, you know, I had a big part to play. Namely, I had to stop sinning.
Yes, and talking about Charismania, I remember one pastor up in Madison, Wisconsin, who developed cancer. It was in my process of coming to understand grace. And I had been a guest speaker at their church many, many times. The church was growing and thriving. And by the time I was there last time and the time I got back, I had understood a lot more things about the issue of grace. And I got up and I taught up and I preached on it. And the response from the congregation was palpable. It was very positive. So the pastor went back to her office. And as always, I went back there with her. And she was agitated. She was upset. She was battling cancer. She was battling for her life. She broke into tears, and she said, if what you're saying is true, then everything I'm doing is absolutely worthless. Now, suddenly, she is covered with shame because she thinks that this is addressing her actions and deeds. She's standing between the old world and the new world, if you will, and a severe tearing is taking place. She's fighting for her life. I certainly do understand that. Now, at that point, this precious woman had a choice to begin to embrace the truth of God's grace, or she was going to double down on legalism. Now, when you're in a battle for your life, it's really hard to change what you've put your trust in right in the middle of it. Now, I totally respected where she was coming from, but her choice was to double down on the legalism. Now, the people in the church had heard the grace of God. They began to leave the church because the next service, when she got back up and started teaching, she had refused treatment. She had this huge tumor in her belly and had refused to go to the doctors for treatment. She was trusting God. She got this revelation then, and she said God himself revealed this to her, that the cancer in her body was representative of the cancer that was in the church, and that she would not be healed of cancer until their cancer was gone. So she now has blamed the entire church for their actions and deeds, their impure thoughts, for her battle and the threat of her life for cancer.
Did she die?
She died.
What happened to the church?
The church does not exist anymore. But we have a couple of people in the Gospel Revolution who were a part of this church. This is not a story that is was buried someplace. This was a tragedy of tragedies. This woman is dead because she refused treatment. She mistook morality for spirituality. When you mistake morality for spirituality, that will be the end of mental and emotional stability and clarity. When your value and your worth is at stake in your beliefs, you're not in a good place. Now, the way that this showed up in the religion of Christianity that Moses Gatha was in Kenya was he and his family had sold their lives out to mission work. And the guy whose ministry that they were in, Moses began to be more popular than this guy. The people liked hearing him speak more than this other guy. I get thrilled when people say something better than I say it. I think it's fantastic. It's like I want to sit down and just like, let me listen, please. I don't want to ever stand up again. But you see, when your identity is wrapped up in what you do, including your gospel preaching, whatever that is. There is a jealousy because this is your identity. And to eliminate this challenge to who he was, he sent Moses and his wife to the most obscured village with no communication, no food or anything. They had two babies.
Let me guess, he said it was the will of God, right?
Oh, yes. God spoke to him and told him, you know, you are so great. We're sending you into the middle of nowhere. This is a term we throw around, the ability to be authentic. I may make people uncomfortable being truthful, but you're just going to have to deal with the discomfort because I'm not going back to trying to pretend. Case in point. Do you remember a month and a half ago, I was on this show telling everybody about this drastic change in my diet?
Yeah, yeah. How's it going?
Yeah, and you remember I probably made you feel bad and everybody else, oh, God, I should do it too, you know. Who knows what all I caused in that. I went for 30 full days, no sugar, no flour, no caffeine, no processed foods, no canned foods at all, none. And then I went to Calgary, Alberta, and I went to my favorite hotel that has my favorite restaurant. I realized I'm not going to be able to stick with this. I'll watch my diet a bit. But, man, I'm telling you what, Barris, the first bite of good food I had in Calgary, since I was at Calgary, I have had to eat everything I didn't eat during that 30 days.
So when I come down to visit you later this month, I'm actually going to be able to lead a relatively normal life. Is that what you're saying?
I don't know. The only thing I can tell you is that pertaining to diet, I am completely and totally bipolar. I mean, it's just, it's ridiculous.
It's all on or it's all off. I love it. Listen, just make sure it's all on. Make sure it's all on when I get there, buddy.
Absolutely. So, and I thought about this, and the thing that I wanted to do was update people. But when I realized I wanted to update people on this, I realized something was very different about me than before, because I would have hidden the fact that I had not just gone off the diet. I'm telling you, I didn't just go off that diet. I'm eating things I haven't ate in a decade. It's like a crusade.
Bacon.
Yes. And a bag of chips to go with it.
Hey, can I give you a recipe? I know that it's not a recipe show, but can I give you a recipe?
Anytime.
It's called pig candy. Pig candy. Here's what you do. You take the thickest bacon you can find down at the supermarket, and you put brown sugar all over and broil it. Stick it under the broiler. And, man, you're going to live until you die.
We'll do it as soon as you get here, okay?
Done.
So I wanted to share this example. You see, when your identity, I got so thrilled when I realized that I'm not going to try to cover this up. I'm not going to say, well, yeah, I'm not sticking to it as good as I was. No, I've gone crazy.
How long did you spend saying, will I or won't I publicize this? And how did you feel? Did you feel a bit tormented that you'd failed, or you had to say that you'd done a 180, or was there a period of time you had to think your way through that?
No.
Oh, you're saying this was just natural outcomes?
It really was, and that's what I was surprised at, is that there wasn't a consideration of not being forthcoming with this whole thing.
And how are you linking that to the gospel?
I'm linking that to the gospel on the issue of shame and being unable to be authentic and to be just open about ourselves. Now, I don't know how valuable that would be to somebody else. When I listen to people, like that TED meeting that I listened to, which I got so much out of it, but the one thing that perplexed me was hearing about this extreme struggle between point A and point B. And, I mean, in her story, which, goodness, I recommend people listen to it. There's so many wonderful things in there. I wish I could be as articulate and get as much across in 20 minutes as this woman can. It's fantastic. But when she shared the part about when she realized that she had said something up in front of people, and then she realized what this might mean and how people would see her and view her, that she went into 3 days of absolute seclusion, and just it was terrible. The thing that I enjoyed about her story is that I was able to recognize the absence of that in my life. Like I said, she has some powerful things to say, but I saw the evidence of the lack of the saving power of the gospel. Because, I mean, she's one of the most educated and brilliant minds about these issues of guilt and shame. She's a trained counselor. She has more degrees than several of us put together. But as she was sharing her experience, I realized in her story, there wasn't a support system already there. She had to reach outside herself to try to find a resolve for her situation. Now, in the gospel, you are your own best counselor. You don't have a better counselor than yourself. Now, where does that run amok? Can that run amok? I'm telling you, the greatest counselor you have is inside you. The greatest counselor you have is your own heart. But you see, even a counselor that you're sitting down and talking with, your counselor is only as good as you are honest with your counselor. So would you be a good counselor to yourself? Well, it all depends on how honest you're willing to be with yourself. Now, if you still got something to protect and defend and to justify and all of this, you will not find the counsel. Now, the odd thing is we all go through this, and we all know when a situation has come up that has entangled us mentally and emotionally in a negative way. There is that part of us that immediately informs us of the best counsel that we can have about that. We argue that voice down because of self-justification. I remember going through a situation in a relationship a few years past, and the need that came up in me to make the other person the bad person, to justify the fact, and this has been, oh goodness, this has been a few years ago, to justify my decision for what I needed to do with my life apart from their life, in my life personally. This is a very personal situation in my life. And I remember when I went through it, and this is part of the transition of seeing what the gospel does and does not do and what impact it has and what impact it does not have. You know, the gospel didn't change me at all. All of the weaknesses and insecurities and the stuff that makes up Mike Williams was just as much there then as it ever has been before. All of those things, Barris, to this day are still a part of Mike Williams. Now, what I noticed was, which was the ability of this counsel coming from within instead of the outside, because I turned to all of my friends. I told them how bad I was treated. Man, I was done wrong. They did this, they did that, they did this. And all of my friends come to my rescue, and they all defended me. Why, that dirty scoundrel, how dare them do you this way? How dare them kick them out of your house, do this, do that, you know? Everybody piled on with me. And suddenly I felt sick at my stomach at what I was doing. And that's when, because I was so blatant and so blatantly wrong about needing to justify my decision, I knew that this relationship was not a good one for me. But instead of me having the guts just to say, you know, this doesn't work for me. This is not what I need. Instead, out of absolute insecurity, I had to make sure that everybody that knew me knew this person was a bad person.
And now this is not uncommon. This is probably the most common of all human responses, isn't it?
I think it is. I know it was very common for me. But you see, there are things about me that I hope I get this across correctly. I don't want you to think that those insecurities and weaknesses about Mike Williams, the gospel has removed them. It hasn't. What the gospel has done for me is cause me to react and to take action where they are concerned in a whole different way. Because shame is gone, I no longer have to justify that I have weaknesses that prevent me from being around certain people. I have character flaws. I can state where I am, and that to me is the power of the gospel. And I cannot tell you for me what a powerful place of peace that is.
Now, this morning in another group, I found myself signing off with this byword, nothing to prove equals nothing to lose.
Mm.
And when I've had to prove things, and I don't know where that came from, it came out of inside somewhere, but in the past I've had to prove you're wrong, I'm right, and I think something you said had probably a huge impact on this, and that is if you really want to seek truth, you just start by not deciding that you know it to begin with. Essentially, that's what I took from what you said. But nothing to prove equals nothing to lose. It's an incredible, wonderful place of freedom, Michael.
Oh, it really is. And, you know, Janis Joplin actually tried to help us to understand that. Freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. This tremendous knowledge is not just things that we can access. These are things that are part of the human heart, the renewed heart, the brand new heart that the entire planet got. And I do hope, because this keeps coming back to me, I don't want to leave the impression that I have changed. Mike Williams has not changed. How I negotiate Mike Williams has changed. I got a phone call from one of my dear friends and a gospel revolutionary, and he actually had a question along these lines about a relationship that he was having difficulty dealing with, and he started going kind of towards the thing of what do I need to change, and right in the middle of this, I found myself assuring him that the issue of him changing is not the thing. You've got these weaknesses, you've identified this part that this is a part of your character, and you make your decisions empowered by the fact that none of these weaknesses define who you are. The renewed mind doesn't mean you now are freed from your weaknesses and your character flaws. It means you now deal with them from a base that is not filled with shame.
Now, Michael, the second point you put down here in the show notes was attaching positive or negative outcomes to daily events as spiritual marks the end of spiritual growth and the continuation of self-righteousness filled with guilt and pride.
Yes, you know, Bears, we've covered a lot of territory today on the issue of this issue of guilt and shame based on the mind. And now we need to address these things, these external things that we are not addressing the way that we think. Goodness, we could probably do two or three more shows just on this. But this issue of attaching spirituality to positive and negative outcomes of just daily life, my, there is no spiritual growth in that. In fact, you're caught in a cesspool. And I think it'd be a good topic for us to cover next week.
A whole week? I got to wait a whole week for this?
Yeah.
And here I have a list just fresh off the Jeff Robertson Bakery line of pledge givers for this our spring pledge drive. And it's a short list, but it's a long list given that we've only just started. So we start with Tom and Linda Wilby from Fredericton, New Brunswick. Robert Vacanti from Ottertail, Minnesota. Wolfgang and Helga Dykerhoff from Bluffton, Alberta. Jerry and Susan Berman from Longwood, Florida. Cookie Davy Duck, how are you up there, Cookie? Castor, Alberta. Dwayne and Ruth Daku from Saskatoon, Saskatchewan, Canada. Billy Thompson from Huachuca City. You like that, Billy? From Huachuca City, Arizona. James Taylor from Calhoun, Louisiana. Albert Vitali from Gainesville, Georgia. Elizabeth Ward from Monroe, or is it Monroe, Washington? Mike Camelotis from Chandler, Arizona. Mike Camelotis, thank you. Doug Bowman from Little Rock, Arkansas, and Walter Wilson from Selma, Alabama. Now, this might sound to you just like any other list of names, like a telephone directory, but let me tell you who these names are. These are the names of people who are helping get this gospel out through Korean ears, through Dominican ears, through English ears, German ears, Chinese ears, through Kenyan ears, through African ears, through ears all around this planet as this gospel goes global. And most of all, these are the names of people who've helped get this broadcast to your ears. So get your pledge in early. Get your pledge in often if you can. But most of all, just get your pledge in. And remember, it doesn't matter if it's $1 or $100. It doesn't matter if it's a few cents done on a regular basis. We are just so blessed to be able to apply what you have given us so generously to getting this gospel out around the world.
Gospel Revolution.
Of the one walking in my garden in the cool of day, and he's pulling weeds, he's trimming branches, waiting patiently. Mary rightly called him the gardener on that resurrection day. The fruit of the earth is so precious to him that I can hear him say, you have your own supply, and I am taking out.
And so it is that we must leave you, folks, but not before we say a huge thank you to all those gospel revolutionaries out there who make it possible to bring you this podcast each and every week. If you'd like to join us in increasing this coverage of the gospel of grace and peace, call our office at area code 352-569-4889 and speak to Jeffrey. If you would like to leave a message for the show, simply telephone us at 123-456-40971. Our web address is www.gospelrevolution.com, and you can catch us on Facebook at Friends of Mike Williams and the Gospel Revolution. Our radio station broadcasts all day, every day at gospelrevolution.radiostream123.com. And so it is good night from myself, Beres Bartlett, at the plush yet humble GR Studios in Nashville, Tennessee.
And good night from the very grateful Michael Williams. Not the Grateful Dead, at least not yet. Thank you guys so much for participating in the Spring Pledge Drive. Your support does amazing things, just utterly amazing. More and more, it seems, every month is being accomplished, and we are excited about everything, not only that is happening and going on, but we're excited about having you on board. Thank you so much. Love you guys.
No Christians were harmed in the making of this show, and all refunds are guaranteed as the state laws of Texas and Tennessee require, but only just. Remember to join us again next week, same time, same channel, where we will say the same thing all over again.
Better?
Okay, better.
you had certain things pounded in your head. And the way he was teaching made you get your Bible and look and say, well, yeah, that's right. Why wasn't I taught that? Why was I taught this other thing? And then it was gradual because, like I said, I had this ingrained teaching. That's the first thing your mind goes to is that ingrained teaching of, well, what he's teaching can't be right until you get to reading the scriptures and realizing that most of the things that you were taught as a child was taking out of context. They just took certain phrases and built on that instead of taking the whole three or four verses there together to get it all the right things out of it.